We would like to suggest the following. Some of what you hear discussed in our group may differ considerably from what you frequently hear in other meetings. We ask you to keep an open mind as to what is discussed. In this group, we talk about the program of recovery that was practiced by the first 100, as is written in the big book. If you cannot reconcile something that we say about the program of recovery, or something that somebody else says, with either the big book or the 12 and 12, then we suggest you disregard that information. We'll start as always with the set aside prayer. Dear God, we set aside anything I think about myself, about my disease, about the big book, the 12 steps, the program, the fellowship, the people in the fellowship, and all spiritual friends, especially you, God, so that I can have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help me see the truth. Amen.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Chris, and I'm an alcoholic. I appreciate the fact that the set-aside prayer is said at the beginning of these meetings. I've found it to be very helpful myself. One of the things that's going to stop me and stop my ego from learning anything or growing spiritually is to think I already know. If I come to something with an answer, or I listen in meetings to hear where I'm already right, I'm never going to grow spiritually. So, you know, when you hear the set-aside prayer, for what it does for me is it reminds me to be open-minded. It reminds me to never shut myself off from new information and especially from new experience. Where the set-aside prayer came from, it's all over the country now. I discovered the set-aside prayer on some Mark Houston and Joe Hawk tapes many, many years ago. In 1996 or so, they were going around the country doing big book tapes. And I stole that prayer and started to use it in Burnsville. And I think a lot of people have done the same thing because it's so powerful. In the book, it says, we beg of you to lay aside prejudices. And if you're not open-minded, if you don't have a beginner's mind, you're going to have a whole lot of trouble with Alcoholics Anonymous and especially with spiritual growth. I've gone through my periods of this, and I know that I'm not alone, but I work very, very hard to stay open-minded. Now, this is we're doing the second half of Bill's story. The first half of Bill's story is basically the drama. And the second half of Bill's story is the recovery. So this part of the story really is my favorite part. And before we even get into it, I would ask that while we're going through this story, think about what Bill does to recover. Because it's all laid out in here, exactly what he does to become a recovered alcoholic. What does he do? Another thing that I did when I first approached the big book, the first time I got a big book was in treatment. They handed it to me. I read it like it was the Da Vinci Code in about a day and a half. All my friends, my rehab friends signed it. I still have this book. And I don't even remember the people that signed it, but there's stuff like, Chris, you're the craziest bastard I ever met. You're never going to make it love Harry. You know, I mean, there's all these things. You know, it was a dust collector. For a long time afterward. You know, you can hear things over and over and over again if you have that closed mind. I heard How It Works read at every single meeting until the cows came home, and I still didn't understand really how it worked. I thought it worked by going to a lot of meetings. No, How It Works is how it works. You know, I think that's a reason why we read it. Here are the steps we took as a program of action. So let's look at what Bill does and how he does it, because I think that can help us get a better idea of maybe where we're falling short with our program. Alcoholism is an aggressive, tragically, progressively fatal illness. If you don't pay real serious attention to it and you don't address it with a serious program of action, it will kill you an inch at a time. A friend of mine says dying of alcoholism is like getting kicked to death by rabbits. It just goes on and on and on and on until you finally check out, you know. And I don't wish that on anybody. I really don't. Now, before I start reading, I want to just set the stage. What was going on around this time that Bill Wilson gets it's going to start with Ebby knocking on the door, okay? Ebby's coming from the Oxford Group. I want to just talk a minute about that to give a historical perspective on what kind of climate this was in. Around the turn of the century, there was a number of evangelical Christian organizations that popped up. And they weren't about going to church for an hour on Sunday. They were about meeting every single night. They were about getting into action. They were about going out here and witnessing, go over here, help people. You know, just the way some of the real Christian mega churches do it today. I mean, they bring you and your family in, and it's all about transforming your attitude and your outlook, and finding the power to be able to transform your life. Now, one of them was the Jacobi Club. There was the Emmanuel Movement. Another one was the Oxford Group. And they all had some of the same dynamics. And what they were was a fellowship where you joined up and you came in and you integrated in with this fellowship attitude. But there was also work to do. And in the Oxford Group, they insisted on certain things. Witnessing. Confession of sins. Restitution, prayer and meditation, an admission from you as an Oxford Group member that of yourself you are nothing. Without the Father doing the works, you ain't going to be able to get it done. A lot of this stuff was going on, and a lot of alcoholics were getting sober in these evangelical organizations. Bill Wilson was not the first alcoholic to get sober in the Oxford Group. He wasn't even the first alcoholic to get sober in the Oxford Group and write a book about it. There's at least three other books prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, books that I know of, that were written by ex-alcoholics that were in the Oxford Group. You know, those great books. You can find them. John will help you find them. I Was a Pagan. The Big Bender. You know, For Sinners Only. I mean, there's a number of these books that were written by Oxford Group members about people who had been sinners, which is a lot of times what they considered us, because if you see us late on a Saturday night, you know, you're going to know what we're talking about. So these people, when they came in and they got busy, they fellowshipped and they took part in the action processes of these evangelical organizations, they stopped drinking and their lives changed dramatically. So this is what happened to this Ebby guy who's about to knock on Bill Wilson's door. He got exposed to the Oxford Group and he was looking around for someone to witness to, somebody to help. Because part of the Oxford Group, just like part of Alcoholics Anonymous, is helping the next person. You have to help the next person. Near the end of that bleak November, I sat drinking in my kitchen with, the page that has Ebby with the really cool haircut. That's where we're starting. It's a little more than halfway through. With a certain satisfaction, I reflected there was enough gin concealed about the house to carry me through that night and the next day. My wife was at work, and she continued to be at work for like the next 20 years while Bill ran around and was the AA guy. I wondered whether I dared hide a full bottle near the head of our bed. I would need it before daylight. Again, I want to emphasize, Bill Wilson was what the big book refers to as a real alcoholic. What is a real alcoholic? A real alcoholic is a hopeless alcoholic. What is a hopeless alcoholic? A hopeless alcoholic is somebody who is chronically drinking themselves to death, desperately wants to stop, has tried everything in their own power to be able to stop and has not been able to. And finally, he's gotten to the point where he's tried to quit so many times he's not even trying anymore. He knows he's going to die. And he's just resigned himself to it. And that's where we can get at the end. My musing was interrupted by the telephone. The cheery voice of an old school friend asked if he might come over. He was sober. It was years since I could remember him coming to New York in that condition. Bill did a lot of drinking with Ebby. You know how we have old drinking buddies, you know, for a year or two until something pisses us off about them, you know, and we don't see him again for a while. Well, he knew what Ebby drank like. Ebby drank like a Kennedy. You know what I mean? He drank. I was amazed. He had been committed for alcoholic insanity. So rumor had it. I wondered how he had escaped. Of course he would have dinner. Then I could drink openly with him. So he's like, hey, my old drinking buddy's going to come over. We can relive the time that we chartered an airplane to like land on a brand new airfield before the parade. I mean, you know, he had all these crazy things that he had done, and he wants to reminisce. You know how we are. Unmindful of his welfare, I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. There was that time we had chartered an airplane to complete a jag. Another glass stirred my fancy. His coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. The door opened. I remember I had lost all of my friends. I was drinking in a room in my mother's house. She was just one of those mothers who was not going to put me out on the street. I had burnt the house down twice. I mean, any rational person would have thrown me out. But she just wouldn't do that to me. So I had a little safe haven at the top of this house where I would sit there and talk to the bourbon bottles. All of my friends were gone because I was nuts. I was insane. I would be like happy-go-lucky, I want to kill you! You know, I was one of those alcoholics that was just unpredictable and you didn't want to be around. So I'd lost all my friends. Well, there was a knock on my door one day, and it was an old friend of mine, Danny, who I used to be in a band with. Hadn't seen him in 10 years. I said, come on, move on in. You know, he was looking for a place to live. And, you know, he moved on out pretty damn quick too. You know, after he actually dragged me up to an AA meeting. This was like 1982. Dragged me to an AA meeting, trying to help me before he moved out, you know, but I wanted to recapture that, you know, back in the band days, you know, and there was none of that left. There was just me and my alcoholic insanity. And so I know exactly how Bill was feeling at this point. He stood there, fresh skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. You notice when the lights go back on, like if you're working with a sponsee and you're taking them through the steps and they get it? You know what I mean? And the lights come on? That's the most wonderful part of my life today. Being a part of someone else's spiritual awakening. That's really what it is when the lights come back on in somebody's eyes. And they're firmly in the process of recovering, and they will soon be recovered. He recognized this in Ebby. You know, there's a self-esteem that comes back to us. There's an authority, there's a clarity that we have when we recover. And when we're unrecovered and, you know, we're all like sliding around and we can't look you in the eye. Well, Ebby was different. He was inexplicably different. What had happened? I pushed a drink across the table. Not now, he said. Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had got into the fellow. He wasn't himself. Come on, what's all this about? I queried. He looked straight at me. Simply but smilingly, he said, I've got religion. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I'm glad that they do it a little differently in 12-step calls today. Because you ever have the rollers knock on your door Sunday morning because they want to read the Bible to you or something? You know, that can put you off when you're an alcoholic, you know, living like I was living, you know? You didn't want a reminder that there's moral codes and, you know, ethical behavior. You don't want that shoved in your face. That's inconvenient. But because this was an old buddy, you know, Bill didn't throw him right out on his ass, which he probably wanted to do. I was aghast. So that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot. Now I suspected a little cracked about religion. He had that starry-eyed look. The old boy was on fire, all right, but bless his heart, let him rant. Besides, my gin would last longer, but he did no ranting. In quite a matter-of-fact way, he related how two men had appeared in court persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. They had told of a simple religious idea and a practical program of action. That was months ago, and the result was self-evident. It worked. It had come to pass. He had come to pass his experience along to me if I cared to have it. That was months ago, not years ago. He was a drunken sot merely months before, and now he's roaming around New York City looking for people to witness to. This spiritual awakening thing the recovery from alcoholism does not have to take a long, long time. It takes 2 years and going through the steps. It takes 10 years and going through the steps. It takes 2 months and going through the steps. You know what I mean? That's what it takes. I was shocked but interested. Certainly I was interested. I had to be, for I was hopeless. He talked for hours. Childhood memories rose before me. The sound of the preacher's voice, which one could hear on still Sundays, way over there on the hillside, the pro-offered temperance pledge I never signed, my grandfather's good-natured contempt for some church folk and their doings, his insistence that the spheres really had their music, his denial of the preacher's rights to tell him how he must listen, his fearlessness as he spoke of these things just before he died. Such recollections welled up from the past. They made me swallow hard. That wartime day in old Winchester Cathedral came back again. Now, if Bill Wilson didn't have a little crack of open-mindedness here, he would have shut the door completely on what Ebby was saying. But Ebby was witnessing. He wasn't just talking. He was a changed person. In a power greater than myself, I had always believed. I had often pondered these things. I was not an atheist. Few people really are, for that means blind faith in an illogical proposition that this universe originated in a cipher and aimlessly rushes nowhere. My intellectual heroes, the chemists, the astronomers, even the evolutionists, suggested vast laws and forces at work. Despite contraindications, I had little doubt that a mighty purpose and rhythm underlay it all. You know, I was probably about in the same place as Bill Wilson was. Understanding the last several years of my drinking, what was going on then was Jim and Tammy Faye Baker were selling 5,000 heavenly condos when they only had two, and you know, robbing people. Jimmy Swaggart was calling me a sinner on Sunday TV, and he's getting caught in motels with Texas hookers and being thrown out of the Christian, you know, associations. You know, so I'm thinking, you know, these really, really obnoxious religious people are hypocrites. I don't want any part of that. I don't know about you, but as an active alcoholic, we are acutely aware of hypocrisy in other people. It's difficult to see in ourselves, but boy, can we see it in other people. It's one of the reasons why we have such a sense of resentment. We're boiling cauldrons of resentment usually when we get in here. We're mad at everybody. You know, we are holding people accountable. And I was holding these religious people accountable because, you know, damn it, if this is God's front three, I want no part of it, you know? I may be a scumbag sinner, but I'm not robbing widows of their pension money, you know? And that's really where I was. So I am glad somebody didn't come up to me at my first AA meeting and say, hey, are you here to get religion? Because what I would have done was I would have said, no, I'm not. Thank you, though, and I would have turned around and left. And I would have known that religion wouldn't work for me. I would have known it. It might have worked for me if I would have given it a chance, but I would have known without a doubt in my mind that it wouldn't work for me. So this is part of the seconds and inches that we've been able to develop a society and we've been able to recover. Seconds and inches. Bill was probably inches away from throwing Ebby out of the house, you know, but he didn't. What he did was he was so hopeless at that point in time and didn't have any energy and just, you know, it just kind of happened the way it happened. Personally, I think God got tired of seeing all of us alcoholics die, you know, and the marvelous, bizarre, unexplainable, un understandable way of God was at work At that kitchen table. If you want to see the kitchen table that this happened at, I highly recommend, it's only about an hour and 15 minutes from here, go up the stepping stones. You can sit at that table and get a picture taken of you. It's a really nice experience if you've never done it. How could there be so much of precise and immutable law and no intelligence? I simply had to believe in a spirit of the universe, which knew neither the time nor limitation. But that was as far as I had gone. With preachers and the world's religions, I parted right there. When they talked of a God personal to me, who was love, superhuman strength, and direction, I became irritated and my mind snapped shut against such a theory. They talk about coming to believe in here. There's even a book that AA publishes called Coming to Believe. In the early days of the Oxford group, they didn't expect you to believe when you walked in the door. They expected you to have issues, you know, that you're coming there for help. But they would give you spiritual exercises that were designed to give you faith. That's what there is in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't think you can have a relationship with God the way Bill talks about in here without going through the steps as an alcoholic, because the steps are designed to help get rid of the things that are blocking you off from a really powerful connection to God. That's really what the steps are. They also help with personal relationships and honesty and a million other things. But it's that separation that the alcoholic has. We're dying of separation because of our selfishness, our self-centeredness, our self-absorption. We truly think we are the only people on this planet. And that's really what we're dying from. That selfishness and self-centeredness, it causes all of the defects of character that separate us from the divine connection that allows us to live a healthy life as an alcoholic. Of Christ I conceded the certainty of a great man, not too much followed by those who claimed him. And I was right there with Bill myself, obviously. I totally believe that most of the people who profess Christianity didn't even understand what it was. You know, had they actually read the words of Jesus? What I saw was he had a complete different philosophy than what was going on in the churches. I just didn't understand how, you know, there was a philosophy of compassion going on with Jesus, and there was a philosophy of separation going on in these churches. The wars which had been fought, the burnings and chicanery that religious dispute had facilitated made me sick. I honestly doubted whether the religions of mankind had done any good. Judging from what I had seen in Europe and since, the power of God in human affairs was negligible. The brotherhood of man, a grim jest. If there was a devil, he seemed to boss universal, and he certainly had me. During my last detox, you know, for years I didn't even share this because I was attached to whether somebody would think I was nuts or not. Now I don't care. You know, you want to think I'm nuts, you know, that's your deal. But I was in the middle of the second day of the delirium tremens, laying on a couch in my mother's house, trying to get comfortable, drinking a little water and vomiting it up. No sleep, convulsions, hallucinations. And I remember looking up at the ceiling, and out of the ceiling came a demon. I'm talking the kind of demon with the monitor head, with the bull horns, and this thing was coming down to eat my face off. It was going to drag me off to hell. Now, I was hallucinating, I'll give you that, but I was conscious. And I remember screaming, God, help me! Like from the depths of my soul, the terror that was on me, and I reached back to a childhood understanding of God as a protector and as like a parent figure, you know, which I hadn't communicated with God like that in a long time. I figured if I prayed, he'd know where I was, you know, so I didn't do that for a long period of time. So after screaming this, it disappeared like that. I haven't had a drink since. When I got through that particular detox, I understood it was it was my responsibility to get back to Alcoholics Anonymous and throw every bit of effort I had into this thing. Get a sponsor, get a home group, go to meetings at least every night. For the first 8 years of my sobriety, I went to a meeting every night. You know, I did a 4,080 in 4,080. Hell with a 90 and 90. You know what I mean? I did. So anyway, we can experience these unbelievably horrible things during our detox, and during those periods of time that they describe in this book as pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, the times that we think that we just can't go on anymore, we're just going to have to take our own life. So many of us take our own life. For the longest time, I was in a home group where we buried a person a year who had committed suicide. And if you want to go to a sorry ass funeral, go to one where there's four or five children, you know, in teenage years, who's had a parent take their own life because of alcoholism. I mean, most of the time, funerals aren't really that disturbing or sad. We understand that there's birth. We understand that there's death. But that's tragedy when somebody takes their own life. And we do it because of this separation that the alcoholic suffers from. Separation from God. Separation from man. Separation from spirituality. But my friend sat before me and he made the point blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. His human will had failed. Doctors had pronounced him incurable. Society was about to lock him up. Like myself, he had admitted complete defeat. In effect, he had been raised from the dead, suddenly taken from the scrap heap to a level of life better than the best he'd ever known in a couple months. Had this power originated in him? Obviously it had not. There had been no more power in him than there was in me at that minute, and that was none at all. That floored me. Bill knew he lacked the power to stay separated from booze. Ebby is saying, I have the power to stay separated from booze. That was the key issue for Bill. He was desperately trying not to drink again. You know, he had more desire to not pick up a drink than anybody in this room at this point in time. But he was drinking like a fish. It began to look as though religious people were right after all. Here was something at work in a human heart which had done the impossible. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. Never mind the musty past. Here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table, straight out of the here and now. I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. It went deeper than that. He was on a completely different footing. His roots grasped new soil. He had a new attitude, a new outlook on life. He had a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. There's a lot of promises in the big book that describe pieces of the spiritual awakening. Thus, I was convinced that God is concerned with us humans when we want Him enough. The day I actually started to believe that there was an interventionary power from God was the day I truly started to get this thing. And I had been shown many, many times in my life that there was little, there, you can call them bizarre coincidences. Does anybody in here remember like your first 6 months sober, it was the time of coincidences? You'd have a problem with your boss about some specific thing, and you'd go to a meeting and somebody would share about having a problem with their boss on that specific thing. You're like, oh my God, God must have put that guy in this meeting for me to, you know. But there's like 50 of those, you know. I believe that those are little God hugs saying, look, man, I'm here. Okay, you just have to do the work to unblock yourself. I'm here for you. You know, that's really what I believe it is. So, you know, I had that idea of God being the person who lit off the Big Bang and then split, you know. I started to come to believe that I started to believe more in a God that's a verb than a God that's a noun, if that makes any sense. You know, it was more of a power than it was the bearded deity up there, you know, taking score of all the sins the Schroeder boy was doing, you know. It was more about a spiritual power that I could get access to if I participated in spiritual living. And that's when, you know, when I started to realize that stuff, things started to go well for me. And I wasn't shooting myself in the foot much anymore. Thus I was, at long last I saw, I felt, I believed. Scales of pride and prejudice fell from my eyes. A new world came into view. Bill has just taken the second step. Drinking. I mean, think about that. He's coming to believe right then and there at the table with Ebby. That's at least what he's saying. If you listen to his talks, Ebby's talks, and Sam Shoemaker, and you know, if you do enough historical study, you'll find that Bill did not sober up right then and there. He still had some drinking to get done. He even went to the Oxford Group drunk a number of times. But he had come to believe in the power. He just hadn't done enough work to access it yet. It began to look as though religious people were right after all. Here was something at work in a human heart which had done the impossible. My ideas about miracles were drastically revised right then. Never mind the musty past. Here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table. I'm sorry, I read that already. The real significance of my experience in the cathedral burst upon me. For a brief moment, I had needed and wanted God. There was a humble willingness to have Him with me, and He came. But soon, the sense of His presence had been blotted out by worldly clamors, mostly within myself, and so it had been ever since. It was simple as that. How blind had I been? You know, many of us can look back into our childhood and see those periods of time where there was a great comfort. A great spiritual comfort. It could be Christmas, you know. Christmas was a very special and spiritual time for me as a child. You know, I felt a connection to God during Christmas as a 5-year-old. You know, so we've experienced this stuff. It's part of the human condition to need and want that connection with the divine. But because we are so separated by selfishness and self-centeredness, we have moved away from that so far, thinking it's all about us and how we have to manage life, that we're not in contact with that anymore. At the hospital, I was separated from King Alcohol for the last time. Treatment seemed wise then, for I showed signs of delirium tremens when I stopped drinking. There I humbly offered myself to God as I then understood Him to do with me as He would. He did step 3, detoxing in Towns Hospital. I placed myself unreservedly under His care and direction. I admitted for the first time that of myself I was nothing, that without Him I was lost. And that's really where we have to get to. Before we start upon a spiritual life, we really need to understand. We need to be convinced that we're going to die if we don't. People just don't come into 12-step programs and see the steps up on the wall and go, "Oh, cool." Yeah. What they normally do is they look at the steps on the wall and they go, "That won't work for me." Every one of us. Think about the first time you saw the steps on the wall. Did you say to yourself, "That's it. That's it. That's the thing that's going to work. That's what I've been missing." I don't know about you, but I wasn't convinced of that. No way. So to begin this spiritual process, I had to be humble. I just had to be humbled. That's me. Some of us need to be humbled further than others. Because I was just a stubborn, know-it-all, you know, opinionated, prejudiced kind of a guy who really thought I had this world figured out and you can't teach me anything. You're half as smart as me. I had a hard time with this stuff. I ruthlessly faced my sins of omission and commission, and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away root and branch. That's really step 4, and a little bit after step 4. In the hospital, detoxing. My schoolmate visited me, and I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. Fifth step. Again, in the hospital, detoxing. I firmly believe today that there's an economy to our step process. If you're working at out of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, doesn't take a real long time to go through these steps. And they were not written for you to wait a year to do them. They were written for the hardcore, hopeless alcoholic on the hospital bed to be able to take. I used to hear things when I first came in like, "You know, kid, Don't even bother with the steps for the first year. You got to get your head out of your ass first. What I've come to understand from my own experience and my experience working with others is you don't get your head out of your ass until you go through the steps. This guy had it backwards because he'd never gone through the steps. You know? We made a list of people I had hurt or toward whom I felt resentment. Step 8, again, on the hospital bed in the first couple of days. I expressed my entire willingness to approach these individuals, admitting my wrong. Never was I to be critical of them. I was to right all such matters to the utmost of my ability. There's more documentation on Dr. Bob making direct amends, but I fully believe that Bill Wilson went around and made direct amends too. He just doesn't talk about the specifics of it, and I haven't found any writings of the specifics of it. But if my opinion is correct, as soon as he got out of the hospital, he was about the business of making amends. I believe that's the case. I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within. Common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for the direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. Never was I to pray for myself except as my request bore on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. That's really steps, a little bit of step 10 and step 11. He's learning how to access the power of God by Ebbie Thatcher, who had been evangelized by the Christians in the Oxford group. Bill Wilson's great contribution to all of us was he made this process secular. He took it out of the hands of religious organizations and placed it firmly in the hands of alcoholics. Because these really are spiritual principles. All decent religions have the same type of spiritual principles. You'll find them in Islam, you'll find them in Judaism, you'll find them in Christianity, you'll find them in Buddhism, you'll find them in Hinduism. The Zen masters will teach the same things. They all know that the spiritual right living results in good things in your life here and now. There's cause and effect. Whatever you give out, you get back. You know, these are all spiritual principles that the Asher group was about the business of boot camping you into doing. Ebbie came, did the same thing with Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson now has learned a treatment, an effective treatment for alcoholism. And that's this spiritual process that we're talking about here. My friend promised that when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of life which answered all my problems. What a promise that is. The hell with the ninth step problems. How about this? How about this one? We'll answer all of my problems. We'll have elements of a way of life that will take care of all of our problems. That's a hell of a promise. Never was I to pray for myself except as my requests bore on my usefulness to others. Then only might I expect to receive, but that would be in great measure. Belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things was the essential requirements. You want to throw a discussion meeting into left field sometime? Talk about what are the aspects of the new order of things that are essential to recovery. And you can talk about willingness, honesty, humility, and very soon the meeting will turn to resentments or fears. I've actually tried it. I'm not always popular. Simple but easy. A price had to be paid. It really meant the obliteration of self. This is much stronger than the language that's found in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Obliteration of self. Bill Wilson talks about selfishness, self-centeredness. That's the root of our problems. Alcohol's not the root of our problems. selfishness and self-centeredness is. He calls it egocentric, as they call it nowadays. You got to remember that Freud, Jung, Adler, and a bunch of psychiatrists were popping up right around the time of the writing of this book, and they were delving into the ego, you know, and they saw most of the world's problems come really from this egocentrism. The selfishness is self-centeredness. Well, selfishness and self-centeredness kills alcoholics because it drives us into drink to escape the pain of our existence. Sobriety becomes untenable for the alcoholic without a shift in perception, without a spiritual awakening. I saw this great movie, Days of Wine and Roses, and there's this couple, and they're both alcoholic, and then they both get sober, and then one of them stays in AA, and one of them goes back to drinking. And he's talking to her, and it's been a while since I saw this movie, but this scene really, really was affected me. She goes, you know, when I'm not drinking, everything is gray. When I drink alcohol, it brings color to my world. And I related to that. After two or three drinks, my troubles would just drop off of me, and then I'd become a vomiting pig pretty quickly. But for a short period of time, I would escape the pain and travesty of my pathetic existence. And, you know, we are driven toward that, even if it's a momentary solution of alcohol, we're driven toward that, even against our will sometimes, to escape this separation, this selfishness, this self-centeredness, this egocentrism, whatever you want to call it. I had to quit playing God. I must turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over us all. These were revolutionary and drastic proposals, but the moment I fully accepted them, the effect was electric. There was a sense of victory, followed by such a peace and serenity as I had never known. There was utter confidence. I felt lifted up as though the great clean wind of a mountaintop blew through and through. God comes to most men gradually, but His impact on me was sudden and profound. And I think I know why. He'd done the first 8 steps before we even left the hospital. Of course he had a spiritual awakening quickly. It talks in the spiritual experience appendix in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Many of us get a spiritual awakening of the educational variety slowly over time because we slowly do the steps over a bunch of time. That's why it's of the educational variety slowly. For a moment I was alarmed and called my friend the doctor to ask if I were still sane. He listened in wonder as I talked. He finally shook his head saying, "Something has happened to you, I don't understand, but you had better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were." The good doctor now sees many men have such experiences. She knows that they are real. While I lay in the hospital, the thought came that there were thousands of hopeless alcoholics who might be glad to have what had been so freely given to me. That one sentence is why we're all here. Remember I said many people got sober in the Osher group, in the Emanuel movement, the Jacobi Club, and any kind of evangelical church movement that had you get busy. There was many people, but they didn't think about going back out and helping alcoholics. They said, "Man, I'm glad I got mine." You know, where's the next choir meeting? You know, Bill, understanding how hopeless he was, he decided to dedicate his life to us, to helping us. Perhaps I could help some of them. They in turn might work with others. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of my demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said. A lot of times, I used to refer to the work, going through the work. And then my spiritual advisor one time grabbed me by the throat and said, "Chris, why are you calling going through the steps the work?" I go, "I don't know, Joe, because isn't it going through the work?" He goes, "No, that's preparation for the work. The work in Alcoholics Anonymous is when you go out to find other people to take through the steps. You find other people to sponsor. That's the work. The first 9 steps are preparing you, offering you a spiritual awakening, making you a changed person, giving you the power to transform your life so that you can go help other people transform theirs." You know, and I believe that today. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Every single time I see somebody relapse and come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I could ask them this question. Did you work on perfecting and enlarging your spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, or did you keep it all about you? Was your life still all about you? Every single time, it's because their life was still all about them. If they were out there really working on practicing these spiritual principles and then taking those lessons and taking that power out into the world to help others, you don't relapse. You get through the trials and low spots ahead. I see it with extremely few exceptions. I see exceptions in this today because of some of the medications that are out there, painkiller medications, whatever, taking the wrong script. What that can do sometimes is that can activate the allergy of the body, the obsession to use. And we see a lot of people nowadays with a lot of time, decades of time, relapsing to certain medications that they don't understand. That's one of the exceptions. But normally, the people that are working with others, that are actively sponsoring, are not going to drink. If he did not work, he surely would drink again. If he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution to their problems. It was fortunate for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half, and I was too lazy to really look for a job, during which I found a little work. This is an example of when John said, if it doesn't meet up with the big book, ignore it. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. You know, we're still going to have issues, folks. Recovered alcoholics still get sad. They still, you know, have bad days. But we have enough power to get through them, you know, without having to get loaded. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink. I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with other alcoholics would save the day. So even going through the steps, you've got to understand that you need to continue to work with other people. Meetings, steps, sponsorship. Those are we're giving you the key to recovery right here tonight with three words. Meetings, steps, sponsorship. You stay consistent with those three legacies, those three parts of the triangle. You're gonna do okay. And think about it. Alcoholism is progressively fatal. This is a fatal condition. 90% of the people that are alcoholic die from it. So we're actually offered a way out. And you know, we can be glad of that and really try to pay attention to it. Many times I've gone to my old hospital feeling terrible. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. I can't tell you how many times. I want to tell this one story about my first meeting back after my relapse, after seeing the demon come out of the ceiling. I struggled my way to an AA meeting. I hadn't slept in 5 days, but I knew I needed to be back in AA. You know, I remember walking in there and they had a step book and they handed me a step book and they said, "We're reading from step 12. And I looked down the aisle and they were coming at me like it was going to be my turn to read soon. And I panicked and I left the meeting. I couldn't read. You know, I'm not going to read. Everybody will be looking at me. I mean, I was freaked out. So standing out on the steps, and this guy, Jorge, comes out and grabs me, brings me into the meeting, and says, "Sit down." And so I sit down, and he goes, "Now raise your hand and tell everybody you're coming back." And I'm like, "Huh?" But he kept saying it, and people were starting to look at me, so I raised my hand. And I said something like, "You know, it's because of alcohol, it's a relapse, it's demons, it's those back in those, you know, sorrows, it's vomiting, it's all, thank you." And it was dead quiet for about 5 seconds. And then everybody goes, "Yeah!" And they start to cheer. Now, I understand today, you know, I took it as acceptance back then, you know? But I understand today, I know us, that people were saying, "Thank you so much for sharing that. Oh my God, I thought I was having a bad day, you know? You have made me feel so much better about my problems. I'm going to walk out of here smiling. Thank you for sharing, you know?" And That's what happens when we continue to work with other people. We lose sight of a grateful heart. The alcoholic, that slips right out of our hands. And the more we work with others, the more gratitude we're going to have. And the more self-esteem we have. You want self-esteem? Do esteemable acts. Help other people. It is a design for living that works in the tough spots. We commence to make many fast friends, and a fellowship has grown up among us, which is a wonderful thing to feel a part. The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. I am there with you. I have an unbelievable joy of living today. And I've got a life so complicated and so stressful, I would have shot myself, you know, in my first 6 months if I had this kind of life. But I'm grateful to have it. I've got a very, very big job. I got a lot of things going on, and I've got a joy of living in the middle of it all, you know, which is, that's true happiness, it truly is. I've seen 100 families set on their feet in a path that really goes somewhere. We've seen most impossible domestic situations righted, feuds and bitterness wiped out. I have seen men come out of asylums and resume a vital place in the lives of their families and communities. Business and professional people have regained their standing. There is scarcely any form of human misadventure and misery which has not been overcome among us. In a Western city and its environs, there are 60 of us and our families. We often meet informally at our houses so that newcomers may find what they seek. Gatherings of 20 to 60 are common. We are growing in numbers and power. An alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, comic, and tragic. One poor chap committed suicide in my home. He could not or would not see what we beheld. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some will be shocked at our seemingly worldliness and levity. You know, try going into a Rotary Club meeting and talking about accidentally running over or backing over a nun drunk. You know, in AA, it's like, ah! You know, share that in a Rotary Club. But just underneath, one finds a deadly earnestness. God has to work 24 hours a day in and through us or we perish. God has to work in and through us every day or we perish. We have to keep the access to the sunlight of the Spirit open. We have to keep that sunlight open. That's our job. We are not the sun, but we're in charge of making sure the sun can get through to us. Most of us feel we need to look no further for utopia, nor even for heaven. We have it with us on this good old earth right here and now. Each day that simple talk in my kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to men. We are at the hour. John, thank you so much for asking me to come down.